All right. Good afternoon, LinkedIn. Hope you're all well out there in social media land. I'm joined here with Justin McGuire from MCG Talent in Dubai, the housewife's favorite. How are you, Justin?
I'm very well. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I think I was just telling you, I just came out of a private BJJ session. So I feel like I'm in my own movie, you know, where I'm going down like one of these Wall Street people, when in reality, it's not like that at all. But yeah, you grew up for a while down this side of the world, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I lived around 6 years in the south of Spain, and we would hop over to Gibraltar, I think, just to get some fish and chips and you know, shop in Marks and Spencer's or something a bit familiar to home. Look at the red post boxes.
Yeah, and so tell me, what crimes was your father avoiding in the UK to have moved to Marbella in the 90s?
It was the 80s. There is a story there, and I'm definitely taking that offline. That's not going to be right.
So what age were you in Marbella?
I was there when I was 6 to 11.
Did you go back to the UK then?
Yeah, I went back to the UK. And then I moved to... So I did UK for a bit, then I moved to Central America for a year, and then moved back to the UK. And then I went
to Dubai.
I was in Honduras, murder capital of Latin America. Beautiful country. Just used to the sight of guns.
Mate, I was in Honduras, and we went to a place called Rotan.
That's right,
yeah. Rotan.
I got engaged there.
Really?
Yeah.
And but the trip to get out to Rotan, it was like walking around. Was it Honduras City? Is that the?
You would have gone from San Pedro Sula, a place.
That's right.
Which
yeah.
Is really, really dangerous. Yeah. Yeah,
it was super scary, and we got a hostel there, and we got in, and there was bars everywhere. It was pretty scary. So it was like the bed. It was the only one we could get. And the bed felt like it was made of newspapers beneath it. As soon as we got out of there,
I had a gun put to my head in Honduras, but again, that's another story that we'll take offline.
Right, so. You and the family are in Dubai, and we did your legacy story a long time ago on
That's right.
how you made that move. Maybe just give us the quick snapshot.
Quick refresher. So I worked in ad agency world for 7 years, then moved into recruitment and set up a division for a firm in London in the sector that I've worked in. And then when the financial crisis happened in 2008, I was offered a job out in Dubai to front up a recruitment business out here in that space. Came out, and obviously the market crashed like the rest of the world did around about that time. And then decided to, you know, after scrapping around for a bit, decided to set up my own firm out here. So started here, and then we opened up in Hong Kong and then Singapore, where I was when you last spoke to me. Now I'm back in Dubai. So that we're in Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore.
Yeah. So I've never been to Dubai, strangely. I think I was telling you before, my mate runs the world's strongest man competition out there.
That's right. Yeah. But, you get a lot of these sort of random sporting events out here.
Yeah. Well, okay. Firstly, what is it about Dubai that I have in my mind that's probably wrong, or people's perceptions are wrong? Like, give me an idea of what it's like to live there for you.
I think lifestyle wise, it's a very high standard of living out here. Most, you think about it, most of the apartments, most of the villas, everything's popped up in the past 15, 20 years that you would live in. They're all done to a high spec. If you're in an apartment, it comes with probably a gym, a pool, car parking spaces. The city's pretty easy to get around. It's you're in most places no more than sort of 15 minutes, maximum half an hour. I think connectivity to the east and the west is really, you know, if you're in business, that's really handy thing to have as well. You can pop back to the UK at weekends. It's built along the coast, so even though, you know, it's stinking hot in the summer, but actually, outside of that, So let's say from October right through to May, most people live outdoors. It's a very outdoorsy, kind of similar to an Australia lifestyle, yeah. I would say, where gyms are outdoors, a lot of people surfing, a lot of people enjoying outdoor living, playing volleyball, beach, et cetera. The brunches are pretty popular. There's kind of that Saturday, I think people who've been here a while don't necessarily go to the brunches, but there's a very sort of social, fun side to the city as well. And it's a very entrepreneurial town. I think a lot of people come here, and the way the whole system structure and set up here, a lot of people come here with an idea and see that there's an opportunity to drive that idea here. And they don't, like a lot of places where you can live it, living, setting up a business as a foreigner can be very difficult and complicated, but out here, they actually make it relatively easy.
Yeah, it's like a productized service almost out there, isn't it? To get your business there.
It's like where I lived in Singapore before. You've got, Singapore is very much set up with Singaporeans in mind, and the expats come in, and they really are to fulfill the jobs that Singaporeans can't fulfill, or to help support Singaporeans in business. Whereas out here, I think probably because the population, you've got a very wealthy, mostly wealthy selection of UAE nationals in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And most people that do the work are not from here. So you've got kind of got a layer that signed the checks, let's call it that, and the gang underneath who do, they have small to medium-sized businesses, big businesses, and that drive kind of the whole working environment here. So it's set up to be pretty easy to do business here, and I have to say they've done a good job of it.
And so for you, for example, you've got a couple of kids. Your wife's entrepreneurial as well. She does something in our sector, isn't that right?
Yeah. So I've got three kids, and my wife's got an HR tech business. But all her customers for her HR tech business, a diversity hiring platform. They're all in America and Europe, and some in Australia, and all her staff live all across the world. You've got people in Ho Chi Minh, Lagos, Amsterdam, Warsaw, New York, etc. So it works well from a time zone perspective for her, because she's kind of in between the Asia and Europe and America gang. And I think that's probably one of the big appeals for international firms here as well, is the fact that geographically it works really well for people. It's sat right smack bang in the middle. It's 7 hours from Singapore and it's 7 hours from London.
How would you describe the recruitment scene?
I've had a business here for 12 years, so I've seen it mature massively. It's still a very transactional, a transactional relationship that you have with people. It's constant. I think the myth is that Dubai is kind of dripped in gold. You arrive and sort of, gold plated Rolls Royce picks you up from the airport and takes you to the office. It's just not how it is out here. And actually, having recruited in the UK and in Asia, here's probably the toughest place to negotiate rates, and and I'd say getting paid can be quite a challenge out here as well. But there is a great deal of work, but you've got to be constantly out business developing, constantly out chasing the buck, because it's quite small. Even though it's very famous and popular, it's also quite small. If you look at the population of Dubai, for example, it's probably about the same size as Sheffield. And then you look at the other, places that it serves, Doha, like Riyadh, Kuwait and Bahrain, then they're not big, they're not very densely populated. So the businesses that you work with, if they're international firms, they tend to be, smaller offshoots, let's call it that, or smaller, businesses that are set up as part of EMEA. The big powerhouse groups here, the big powerhouse clients are either the government, so the public sector and enterprises, or the big local holding groups. And some of them, they own things you don't even realize they own. You've got a big holding group out here that owns 100% of the Carrefour brand, the French supermarket brand, and things like that. So they're the ones which we do quite a lot of business with. But I think that's the big difference, say, between working in a UK market and out here. One is the size of it. The second is that people aren't used to how recruitment industry works. So if people aren't used to it, the whole process sometimes can be a bit clunky. The time gap between a first and second interview, the fact that your clients might turn up late rather than your candidates turn up late. You know, I've had video calls where the guy's been smoking a cigarette while he's doing, you know, the client's been smoking a cigarette while doing a video call with someone in Europe. You know, they're completely not used to that. It's a different mindset. So I think you've got to get used to, it's a bit wild. It's a bit, you know, you get used to the craziness bit.
Yeah. And we've seen a few recruiters come and crash and burn over the years. What's the pitfalls for people coming over?
Yeah, I think it's not only just recruiters. You've seen come in here and exit. You know, Randstad probably being the biggest one that came in and had to leave the market, and Digital Gurus as well, who came in and left. They're two of the ones I can think about recently. And I think it's what I went back to on the terms and getting paid. I think a lot of people out here set up businesses on the back of having one or two good clients, and either they slowed down for whatever reason, so they didn't really have the other clients to support the staff that they had out here, or people just were paying them late and their cash flow was knocked. Contracting, everything is very perm out here. So if you're used to working perm and contract, you've got to, you know, there's very specific laws as to how a contract business can work out here. And you need a license, which costs around $2 million, I think. It's a very expensive license. And that essentially enables, that gives you a manpower license rather than a recruitment license. And that essentially gives you a license to print visas. But that comes with its end up complications, because the money you've got to put down is pretty clunky. You know, if it's seven figures, that's a lot of money for a business to commit to the region. Then you've also, with that, you've also normally got to be in business local partner as well. So, and you've got to get them, you know, the fact that you've got to pay for someone to have a visa, you're already onboarding quite a lot of costs. And then you, for it to be profitable, you've probably got to get them out as a runner for at least 6 months. So contracting is quite complicated out here. So you've got to add it as a perm reliant business, and that's why you and retained, I found retained businesses is really hard to get here, unless you're the big four executive search firms. It's very hard to get people to commit to retain business, harder than anywhere else I've worked. So that takes quite a degree of work in there. So it's the transactional perm nature that you're in. You know, you're in the scrap, and you've got to sell exclusivity, and you've got to sell your rates high, and you've got to understand that they might pay you late. You've got to understand they're constantly looking for a deal. Something that we've encountered quite a few times, if we've done a few deals with a client, is they hold on to our invoices and then start negotiating on the rates as well. Yeah. You know,
where's the upside here? This also is really
high. Yeah. Well, look, I think it's good that I point out that what the tough part is, right? The good part is that you earn really, you know, obviously you pay no income tax here as a recruiter. So the cost of living is still, you know, elements of it are expensive. Like going out for a beer is quite expensive if you're looking at it in sterling. But actually the cost of living is pretty good. It's really easy to get around. It's the lifestyle that it affords you out here is something probably you would never be able to say a London
population. When I talk to recruiters, I always think recruiters think it's moving abroad. Like they're in such demand that somebody's going to pay stupid money. And I'm always having the same conversation.
Yeah.
All you are is potential. Like until you get out there, learn it, earn your stripes, you're not really that valuable. Your skill set isn't that like great. It's all about your potential. It usually, in most markets, it takes, I would say, to year two, year three, even year four, until you're really bringing home money that is transformational. Is that the same in Dubai?
I think actually in Dubai, so that's the now we're going into the big pool for Dubai. So I think I bring a lot of people over here from the UK, and they can get up and running within 6 months. Normally 6 months is how long it takes people to get going. And if I look at, let's just give this, three people I can think of straight away who moved a year ago, and they're going to do over 200,000. Or two of them are going to do over 200,000 US. One's going to do over 300,000 US in year one. Now, if they're taking home, let's just say they're taking home 20% of that on top of their base, and bases tend to pay probably about 15% to 20% more than what you are in the UK. So you can easily see the upside upside there. Your money in your pocket is substantially more than say you would take in the UK, and that's the big plus in Dubai. If you come in here and you really focus on the work, you're in a less competitive market. You're in an area where, say, if you're trained in London, have that tenacity, ambition, and drive, and you bring that into somewhere like Dubai, where there's a great deal of potential and you can earn tax-free income, you can change your life within 18 months to 2 years. And it does to the good people. The trick you've got to have here, though, is once you get to that point, you've got to have some discipline, right? Because it is a town that's also designed to extract money from you very quickly. You know, people are on yacht parties, people are on beach parties, people are just about every DJ in town comes here. There's restaurants where you blink.
My buddy's joke that I married a prison warden, not a wife.
That would serve you well here. Yeah,
I'm telling you, I need to be training every day of the week. And I need to almost have the kids at the weekend then, and I need to have all my friends at least 1,000 miles away from me. Somewhere like Dubai, I think I'd run amok. Maybe I'm a wee bit older, but it must be hard, the temptation there.
Yeah, I moved here when I was in a different stage in my life. You know, single bloke with no kids, and just came here. It was, you know, my eyes wide open. It was loads of fun, and that's the trick, right? You've got to. A lot of people can get caught in the fact the sun's shining, there's a beach there, there's always great things going. They can get caught in holiday mode for a long time, and they can lose their edge. And that's the thing that you see happen to a lot. Very few people sort of come through the other side after 2-3 years with the same drive and ambition, because they've got more money in their pocket, and they've let their lifestyle slightly get the better of them. So I find that the people that do really well out here, their kind of threshold is that 3-year point. I prefer getting people in from abroad and training them up instead of getting them to know our way.
No, fair enough. And so get an expensive wife, have children, and you'll be hungry to make money forever.
Yes, you'll have no choice.
You've noticed.
One of the big pluses of actually living out here is it's a real diverse cultural melting pot. What I mean by that is that I think it's about 11 expats to one local, right? So if you think, just frame that up as a city and how it looks, that makes it incredibly international. So you know, some of the clients that you're working with have got anywhere between 30 to 40 different nationalities in them. Yeah. That's brilliant, and that makes this place very unique in that sense.
I think you'll know I've lived in a few different places, and I 5 years back in the UK doing the kids house business, that stage of life, horrendous. In the south of England, everybody's just old, white, same background, so boring. I missed a cosmopolitan area. Now, I know Gibraltar wasn't that in the 90s when you were there, or the 80s even. But now it is. Now you walk down the street and it's all the gaming companies, and everybody is kind of different and all the rest. And, you know, every place, after having that experience, it's very hard to go back to not having a multicultural environment. What type of nationalities, what type of other businesses and jobs are people doing out there in such a small city?
Yeah, it's so it's become...
What would your own social circle look like?
It's my social circle is, I think there's a lot of, so from, let's talk from Arabic nationals, I think there's a lot of Lebanese, Jordanian, Egyptian here, because I think here, you know, obviously they come here from their countries, they speak Arabic, and the currency here is pegged to the US dollar, so they can earn very well. And then you've also got the draw from the international firms. So you've got a lot of Europeans here, quite a lot of Australians and Kiwis here as well, actually. Not so many, quite a lot of Canadians, but not so many Americans. That's always been quite interesting to me. And that's just, I think, if I'm being honest with you, I think it's just seen as probably quite a troubled area to most people in the USA, and they've kind of avoided it. And even with our candidates, with our clients, they typically aren't American. I mean, it's a small percentile of people. A lot of Brits here that unsurprising. A lot of Irish as well, the Irish community here. And in terms of industry, the financial sector is massive now, actually. Also, I think the whole sort of diversification from energy, what the government is spending on, is now massively into the tech. So you've got a lot of the big crypto firms setting up here. A lot of VC firms are opening up here. It's very tax favorable for them. Energy companies, naturally, given what comes out the ground. And aviation and travel is a huge sector here as well.
What's the sports scene like for expats?
Yeah, I mean, just about every sort of club you can think of. The big rugby event is the Rugby Sevens, which is always on, probably behind Hong Kong, or what with Hong Kong, where it is, it's probably the biggest one on the calendar now. That's a massive event. Everyone dressed up, fancy dress, great weekend. You've got loads of cricket internationals. Even the Pakistan sort of home cricket takes place here. So we just had the World Cup here last year as well. Quite a few sort of big exhibition football matches. Actually, when my kids go to school, Man City go and train there when they come over.
Wow.
In the winter months. So there's a big investment here into sport and bringing international events. So you obviously see the Qatar World Cup about to make a play. And pretty much everything here at the moment is focused around Saudi as well, because they're just spending their billions on trying to bring people to their country and opening up for the first time. That's one big thing to note, actually, is that a lot of the business that you'll do in Dubai, now, even though you're based in Dubai, it will probably be regional and will probably involve Saudi Arabia now, given the huge amount of money they're spending.
And private school, is there lots of options, and is it relatively affordable for the average expat worker? Or
it's probably different grades, right? So in terms of curriculums, you've got the British, American, Australian, French, and Indian. They're probably the most popular. There's an abundance of schools to choose from. There's not-for-profits as well as the more expensive ones, which are normally linked to UK private schools. So there's, I think what I noticed, and because our kids went to a school that was linked to a UK private school in Singapore, and they went to the same setup in Dubai, there was a 20% price difference between the two. It was 20% cheaper in Dubai than Singapore. And I couldn't work out why. There was no difference in facilities or anything like that. Yeah. So Singapore is very expensive. It is quite expensive, but and sometimes you'll get employers that will give a contribution towards schooling out here. But others just, it's down to you and down to you and where you live. Rents at the moment have gone up quite a bit. And there's probably a few reasons for that. Firstly, it's just because Dubai's, I think, it's become ever more popular after COVID with the remote visas that they opened up here. So many people took that up. Secondly, I think just as a hub, it's just become a lot more desirable than it ever used to be. And thirdly, we've had quite a large influx of Russians here from what's going on in Europe, which has been quite widely reported about. So, yeah, we've kind of had a lot of the intellectual Moscow gang, if they're called that, have moved to Dubai. And also Goldman Sachs and quite a few of the other big banks have moved their staff from Moscow into Dubai as well. So, it's been a lot of money that's come in from that.
So let's say I get the job, I sit down, I'm giving you that look to say, oh, I'm excited to get here. Yeah. What's the list that you're giving me? Don't do this, this law here, culturally this is different than back there.
Yeah.
Be careful on this, this and this. Here's what your roadmap looks like to a successful life here.
Yeah. I think for a start, when you come out here, just remember you got respect.
For a start, you wouldn't hire me, but
yeah. you've got to realize you're obviously moving to a Muslim country. So let's be clear. You've got to respect those laws. Yes, you can. You can drink out here in multiple different establishments, but those are all pre-agreed by the government. It's not like you can walk around the streets with a can of Stella in your hand or anything like that. So. That's not what goes on in this part of the world. You've got just behave yourself. Don't take all your clothes off. Don't go for a street streak when you, if you go to get to the Dubai Rugby Sevens, that's not going to end well for you. You've got to. It's quite a conservative culture, but it's a conservative sort of party culture as well. If you, I don't know how they've managed to combine both of those things, but
yeah. So, what happens to the person who has too much to drink at that bar and has to get home?
Yeah, I think they turn up, unless you're not, you don't leave sort of swinging your fists or you know, taking your clothes off. You can normally. You'll get home and aside from waking up with a horrible hangover from the sunshine, you'll be all right. You should be okay. They just don't like. They don't like people who behave like idiots. They don't like people who behave, you know, just who start singing in the street or disturbing people. You know, if you're gonna a one way ticket to prison, if you're gonna start doing things in front of a local family, because if you upset them, the police will be all over you. But you know, in my time over here, barely known anyone that's had any issues with the police, to be honest with you. It's not, you know, I know there's been some, the odd one or two cases that make the news, but actually it's nothing, really nothing. And I can't really say I've ever really encountered any issues with the police. First thing you'll get is a traffic offence. So there's a lot of speed cameras here. So keep an eye on that.
And for women, is there any misconceptions on what it's like to be a female in a Muslim country like that? I could ask this a lot. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, well, none what's. I mean, it's just like doing business in any international city. Yeah. There's most of the people we work, clients we work with, they're pretty diverse. It's quite. I say there's a few more blokes than there are females here, but that's changing quite rapidly, actually. And it depends what industry you're in, but it's incredibly safe. There is literally zero crime here. So I think most girls that I know and women that I know live and work out here really like the fact that they always feel completely safe. Yeah. My wife goes for a walk at night, you know, to get her, she's obsessed with her steps at the moment, and goes for like a, you know, 40-minute walk. And you never have to worry about where she's going to go. You know, it's the only thing you probably worry about is, you know, it's getting a bit toasty in the summer months.
Is there anything on cohabitation or anything like that that you need
They used to be a little bit strict on that. Yeah, only married couples could live together, but now that's absolutely fine. As long as that's fine now, yeah. And it's even like, used to have to only have a light. It used to be quite tough to get a booze license if you wanted to go and drink and stuff like that. And the minute you've got your Emirates ID, it's very easy to do that. So there's no laws against drinking or anything like that. Well, I think the bit that probably difference maybe between the UK and that is there's a zero tolerance towards drink driving, and they, you know, you've got to be really careful on that. Some people sort of think they can have one pint and go home. I just would never do that. That's a one way ticket to bad things happening.
Yeah. When you're out, you're out.
Don't be loud. Don't be obnoxious. Don't be respectful. The Muslim sort of, you know, culture is all about being respectful to each other. And I think if you're disrespectful, then you just stand out. And probably your people from your own country will point that out to you quicker than the locals will as well. You've got to, you know, keep in mind when the Ramadan months happen, for example, that, you know, whilst eating and drinking in public is allowed, you know, don't do it in the face in front of people that are fasting. You know, there's just basic manners.
And let's say things are going well and I'm making a few pounds. Is it hard to get like into the credit system to be able to buy an apartment and that type of stuff?
No, it's so I've got a property here, and actually it's a pretty good place to invest in. It's you need about 25-30% deposit. That's probably a little bit different from home, but banks will support you if you're working for a company out here that's been out here for a few years. You shouldn't have any issues getting credit. If as long as you've got, can prove your wage. So when you get when you get your visa, you can open up a bank account. It's really, really easy. You will then sort of show them what your salary slip is, and from that you'll be able to probably get access to credit cards and debit cards, etc. I think the access to credit cards many people find is too easy, and that's part of the problem that they can have out here as well.
Yeah, budgeting must be super important when you're out there and you're at the start of your journey and working.
Yeah, well, you can see all people as well make that rookie error. It's quite easy to buy secondhand cars here, And it's quite easy to see a lot of people driving around in Mercedes, BMWs, et cetera. And the access to credit's pretty easy. You know, I had a staff member like in his first 6 months was all of a sudden driving around in a Mercedes, you know, and was on a, next thing you know, he's on a 4-year credit. It was, you know, sucked in straight away, but you know, it happens.
Is there any difference in the recruitment process, whether that be winning business, headhunting, or managing a process in Dubai than, say, Singapore or England?
I think it's quite, if you're in, if you want to go and grab a coffee with someone or do a new business meeting, people are actually quite, you know, in the UK, when you call someone up and you try and, you know, prospect them for new business, they normally, you get the feeling very quickly they don't want to be on the end of the phone to you. Out here, people are a lot more amenable to a call, to going for coffee with you, to, you know, it's a lot easier to meet people. The thing is, I would say to that is, it's a lot easier to meet people, have a 45-minute chat with them and not talk about business at all and walk away and go, well, what have I achieved from that? So people are very open to have... people are very open to just having a conversation with you and, you know, quite very friendly and quite interested in your story. It doesn't necessarily mean they'll do business with you. So you've got to be quite disciplined in fishing out the time wasters or not. People also will make out that they're are to do business with you and say yes, and that probably is going to be a no, or that yes means that yeah, you send me your terms of business and you'll probably never hear from me again. There's a lot of stuff that you have to really qualify a client before you work with them. And some of the problems that we've had over the years is we probably didn't do our due diligence when it came to understanding how enabled that firm was to pay our bills, or actually if they were in a position to hire. So I think the laws have changed a lot now, and the law does protect you a lot more now when it comes to getting paid, but still it's probably nothing like back in the UK.
If you could start this journey again, your younger self, what things would you do differently, or what would you advise yourself to maybe do sooner now that you've amassed all this knowledge of being in the region for so long?
Yeah, I think that's a good, really good question. I actually, I wouldn't change much at all. The only thing I probably would have do different is I'd have made more of a plan to Saudi sooner than I have, because actually the UAE is, when you actually look at the size of the economy of Saudi Arabia, when you look at the potential that's going to be coming out of that country, it dwarfs anything else that's here. And Dubai and Abu Dhabi are pretty substantial in what they can spend, but when you look, basically Saudi Arabia is two cities and a significant amount of desert and an awful lot of money and a desire to change that and actually build a competitor on steroids to the UAE. You know, they're already changing the laws there. They're already opening up, making it much easier for tourists to go there. So you've just got this hugely, you know, untapped potential there. And I think I'd have just liked to have made a play into that a lot quicker than what I had.
What's your biggest goal this now? What's your biggest business goal?
My biggest business goal is, look, I think we need to get more. So our core client at the moment made up of corporates, consultancies, agencies, and technology brands. And I want to make ever more of a play into the corporate and technology brand space in the region. So that's probably the big goal I've got at the moment. And secondly, is I want an office open up in Riyadh by the end of the next year and some boots around there.
Excellent. All right. Well, hopefully we can help you out on that front.
Yeah, that would be great, mate. That would be great. Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. You know, I'm flat out all day long. Thank God I've got a good team doing that.
Jiu-jitsu, yeah.
Thank you, Justin. And any last words for anybody thinking of moving to the region?
Look, just give it a go. It's an easy place to link. You'll love the lifestyle. And if you come here with a mindset of wanting to do really well with a sharp professional attitude, it's a place where you can flourish.
All right. Awesome stuff. All right. That's us today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And if you have any questions, you'd like to find out more about Dubai, Justin's company, or any of our other clients, love to have a chat with you. We've been moving people around the world for 6-7 years now. So feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn and we can jump on a call and take it from there. We'll be back with another live guest in another region at a later date.